This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 904, brought to you by iFanboy listeners like y'all.
No.
That's what people do. They really lean into the L.
Yeah! Yeah. New sounds! Hey, sit alone! Lightning strike. Hey, yeah!
Is it just your imagination or reality?
Lightning.
Have to keep telling yourself it's make-believe.
Come on!
Don't worry!
Lightning. Put your fist up, I ain't gonna mix up. Life is gonna strike you when you're standing right here with us. This is the business.
My name is Josh, putting the new in Hampshire. I think that should be new in New Hampshire, Flanagan. And this is my co-host, Connor, the main man, Kilpatrick. That's a dig. That's a dig. I see that. Yeah. And joining us in the mythical third chair this week is Ryan Halftime Haupt.
Hey, everybody.
What's halftime supposed to mean?
I don't know. I just wanted something alliterative with my last name.
Yeah, it does. But it sounds like they have been a good name. Unless, like,
it was half the effort that I put into coming up with your nicknames.
Fair. I thought it was that, like, you were good in the game until halftime, or the other way around.
I have several Air Force airmen in my family, and they all have, like, actual call signs from flying planes, and I don't have one.
Connor and I, growing up in G.I. Joe years, that was all I wanted, was a kick-ass military nickname.
Yeah.
They always, say what you will about their guns and weapons and all that stuff, they get great nicknames.
My uncle was Crank. That was his call sign.
Cool. Wait, is it Crank Haupt?
No, Crank Mills, because there used to be a thing on World War One aircraft where you'd have to crank the mills. It was a part on the plane.
His
call sign was Crank Mills.
Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 904. Jesus. Every week, one of us picks the book they like best from their stack of comics, and we will call that the pick of the week. We will talk about that comic book. We will talk about other comic books that came out this week in issue form. There's a patron pick where the people who are patrons, you hear more about that later, they vote, and then we have to talk about that comic book, which also came out this week. It's not just any random comic book. It would be impossible to come to a consensus like that. We will answer listener mail if we have time, but if I was a betting man, there will be spoilers. There's going to be caution around that if you care about that sort of thing. My man Halftime has the pick.
The pick of the week this week is Shazam number 5, story by Mark Waid, storytellers Mark Waid and Dan Mora, colors by Alejandro Sanchez, and letters by Troy Pettery. This was easily towards the top of my stack in terms of what I was excited to read, and then quickly became a contender for pick, if only because I thought the idea of taking a character who needs to say a word to access their powers and putting them in the vacuum of space was such a clever idea that I was just like, oh, I don't think I've ever seen that before. That's great. And then the arrival of Mary Marvel was one of the best. It wasn't fully a splash page because it had other panels going on, but it was one of the best, like, single images of a character arrival I've seen in recent memory. Like, the way Dan Mora rendered her power and arrival was so awesome. I was just super, super into it. And I just really love how the story is progressing. I love the way that the gods that control Shazam's powers are sort of vying for that control. Like, I don't know that we've ever seen a situation where the different gods say, like, I want to steer the ship, so to speak, for a little bit. Mm-hmm. So there's just a lot going on. The moon starts spinning real fast and Shazam has to stop it. And it's just, and then the cliffhanger at the end, you know, we gave the spoiler warning where Billy Batson is willing to give up the powers of Shazam to prevent the gods from having influence over him, but Freddie Freeman is willing to take it on in his stead. I thought, again, a very natural and obvious progression of their relationship as people who share these powers, but not one. It's obvious that Freddie would want to take over if Billy wanted to retire. So I just thought there were a ton of great ideas in here, very well executed, beautifully rendered by Dan Mora. And it was the most fun I had this week.
Have you been enjoying the series all the way through, or has your excitement been growing? You said you were looking forward to this issue. Has it just been you've liked it all the way?
I have liked it consistently, but I think it's grown on me in ways I didn't even expect it would. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was a really strong issue. I think we only have one left in this arc. There's a lot to tie up, which I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but there's a lot going on here. I think he needs to explain what's going on with the gods, because as you said, Ryan, we've never really seen this before. I think we need to deal with the family, although I'll be very disappointed if they all get their powers back. I think it's Captain Marvel, Mary Marvel, Captain Marvel Jr., and that's the cap. Too many the last couple of years, there's just been too many people running around in the same outfit with ill-defined powers, no superhero names, and it's just been terrible. We say the same thing every time, but this is a Dan Moore tour de force. I think you're right. That shot of Mary Marvel arriving in the lightning was terrific. There's some really terrific fight scenes. I'm looking at page 8 where he and Mary are fighting the space gorillas in their old-timey space suits, which was terrific. And there was some weirdness too, like the guy who had the bomb thing in his stomach and he spit it out, or he ripped like a python, he unhinged his jaw and it came out, was weird, but in a good way. This was great. We've been praising Mark Waid for, you know, however long he's been back now, 2 years, a year and a half.
So I'm going to give him longer than that.
I'm going to give him one knock. One of his big challenges in the last few years has been when he tries to write contemporary kid dialogue, and it just never sounds right. And so what he needs to do is just write these kids as evergreen teenagers and not try to touch on specific things people say now. It was a huge problem over at Archie, and it was a problem some of the other books he wrote a couple of years ago. When he had
no cap, Mary.
When he had Captain Marvel say, "Thank you for coming to my TED Talk," I just sort of cringed at the. It's just like, just take that word balloon out.
Well, the person who says that is now between 25 and 30.
Right,
not 16. Right. I mean, like it's a basic sort of, and we all do this. But I think that like people are just like, ugh, these millennials. I was like, no, they're old now, which means you're really old. I think you're right about that. The thing about this book for me is, I like it, I appreciate it, kind of don't care. There's a little bit of, and I think it's because you've got Wade and Mora like doing their best, doing damn fine work, but the underlying thing of it is still so messed up right now because it's the captain, it's whatever, and like this is like the, I feel like I've read a lot of, this time we're going to reboot them. You know, very recently, I think Jeff Johns did one of them recently, and before, like it's happened a lot, and they've all been pretty good, but it's almost like I don't trust it to keep going.
Count. Yeah.
Yeah.
This has been the best one.
Dumb.
This has been the best one. This has been the actual back to basics reboot.
Yes.
The captain thing, I don't even care about anymore. I think it's the best workaround they can possibly do. Although when you sit next to Mary Marvel and she says it, it becomes all the more stupid. But whatever. I don't even care anymore.
It stands out so badly. Like it's so difficult.
But this is true. And the thing is, I know you don't really have an affinity for, I've always loved Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
And so I love this book. I like Mary Marvel a lot as a character. And, you know, like I said, as long as they don't bring all the brothers and sisters back with powers, then it's going to be fine for me. I think this book is terrific.
Do you want the tiger back?
Well, the tiger is sure. I'm just saying there's a bit here where the kids are sort of walking around, you know, they're complaining they don't have the powers anymore. And I was like, don't do it.
That's what I'm saying. Like you said, as long as they don't, I was like, they keep talking about it. They have to.
They don't necessarily have to.
They have to because also it's part of the movie. Like they're trying to like get it all. Basically
buried though.
I get it, but they're still like everybody is still trying to have their cake and eat it too. That's and DC is much worse at it than Marvel is for whatever reason. Is to try to square their comics with modern comics and then with the history of the comics and with the movies and with the TV shows. And, you know, they put the best people on it, but you get good moments, but I don't know. There's something. Yeah. It's transitive to me, I guess.
I mean, I can't knock it until it actually does it. Like for now, there hasn't been a misstep. So I'm really enjoying it. This is definitely, for me, a top 10 book being published. It's terrific.
Wow.
And this is a great book. And so I wasn't surprised. I didn't really think about what my pick would be, Ryan. I think, you know, this was certainly in the conversation in my head as I was reading.
I would like more characters to have their name, their superhero name, be an acronym for what their powers are. I was thinking about that this week. So like The Flash, like fast legs, always superheroing, right?
No.
New choice.
Spider-Man, Spider powers individually doing everything righteously.
I think with this story, the other thing is that I know it's sort of part of it, but I don't really love this God's interfering with him thing. We're five issues in. The surprise was, wow, why is he acting like that? And now we know, and I've got to spend another 6 to 8 months like watching them work it out. I don't care about that part. I kind of want this is kind of a thing with a lot of these sort of reboots, is that they have to tell the beginning story again in a certain way, or at least involve the wizards and the whatever. And like, I just kind of tell a story that isn't that. I liked that Geoff Johns one because it was kind of, they were stuck in all the different worlds and going around. Whereas this is, and I just feel like the Greek gods are interfering in like half the books now. And I know that's not correct, but I feel like I see them all the time. They're in the movies. They were, you know, they're in Wonder Woman. They're in, it's just.
Well, my hope is that next issue resolves it.
Yeah. And it's also weird because like with Shazam, you've got a bunch of Greek gods and then a Hebrew king who is clearly, I think, going to be part of the reveal next issue. And then Zeus is talking about the spell that they're bound to by Shazam. So I'm like, so the wizard is more powerful than the gods and able to like bind them.
Yeah.
To
he's one of the five celestial beings that DC has. It's like Shazam, Phantom Stranger, High Father. Like there's like a crew that's like the most powerful people in the universe, and he's one.
Listen,
of them.
When CC Beck thought of this thing so he could rip off Superman,
right.
He wasn't so much worried about the actual mythological hierchy, I don't think.
Yeah, he came up these with letters. An acronym, and that's what's impressive. And he came up with an acronym, and like Mary Marvel has like she also says Shazam, but it's a different set of gods, and same for Black Adam. And I just always thought that was cool.
I don't think I knew that. That is cool, but yeah.
I want there to like, can we figure out an Shazam for like the Mayan gods or like, you know, like I want to like,
no,
I can't,
but that'd be cool. I think
for a very specific kind of, you know, nerd, maybe.
Nerd. Yeah. Me am that kind of nerd.
You am.
That was good. This was a good issue though. This whole thing's been terrific. I'm hoping this. The only thing I think about when I read it is that when it first started, Dan Mora was doing both books, and now he seems to be only doing this book, and that kind of bums me out because it looks great and I like it, but I wish he was back on Batman Superman.
You would probably rather have him on Batman Superman,
right? That's what I'm saying. Like I wish I read it, I'm like, well, I guess he's really not doing two books, and now he's on this one only, and that's a bummer.
He must have gotten way ahead on the other, and there was overlap.
Yeah. Or he
which
broke
makes a lot more
left hand. He draws left. He lost like, his left hand with Shazam, his right hand. With
well, he did hand. Like he what we call this the Bagley dream is that you can actually draw two books at the same time with left and right hand.
Sure.
If Bagley could do that.
While giving an interview.
Well, giving is in air quotes.
While tolerating an interview.
Tolerating an interview. Yeah. No,
tolerating is even pushing it, I think.
Yeah. Listening to someone talk and sort of acknowledging them.
Hang on. This might be retrotting old territory, but that happened.
Well, it's what we do.
Did you guys also have that experience with Bagley? Because I've tried to interview Bagley and had that same experience.
Yeah, that was our video interview at the convention.
It's weird.
So we're talking
I wasn't referring to your experience with him. I don't know about it, but
I was going to say, I didn't think you guys knew that I had tried to interview Bagley once back when I had like a proto pre iFanboy website that I was working on, and I had the same Bagley experience. And so I was a little.
Yeah. Oh, no, ours is on camera. So you can see him ignoring Josh on camera.
Yeah. So just sort of, you know, if you're listening on the old video show days, we would go to conventions, we would interview people, and Mark Bagley was there. And we thought, oh, we should totally talk to him. And he's like, sure, as long as I can keep drawing. And so we did it. And he was somewhat unengaged. But the thing is this, if I think back about it, you know, like I'm an adult now. He was he could have stopped drawing. He could have stopped drawing.
I don't think
for
he can.
5 minutes.
I think that's his curse. It's like he gave his soul to the devil and he never stopped drawing.
Did you ever work with a person and like they're always like perennially busy and harried?
Yes.
That's not because they're perennially. That's just them. That's them acting like that.
Yeah.
And he's that guy.
Yeah. Nice guy. Not knocking him, but it's just funny that he was just ignoring Josh while doing his interview. Anyway, let's move on to Superman 78.
Still producing high level work.
The Metal Curtain number 1 of 6. I do want to at some point talk about the length of miniseries, which has become an issue all of a sudden, but we'll talk about it later. Superman 78, The Metal Curtain. This is the second volume of DC books taking place in the Christopher Reeve movie universe. The first one written by Robert Venditti. This is also written by Robert Venditti. First one had art by Wilfredo Torres. This had art by Gavin Guidry. And I think it suffered for it.
Unfortunately, yes. It was I still thought it was really good. And I thought Robert Venditti is really nailing the tone of those movies. But I agree, the art didn't capture the spirit and the essence of the actors quite as well.
Yeah, I mean, this was fine. I enjoyed it okay. It's basically like, you know, the movies took place in the 70s. And, you know, so that's sort of the height of the end of the Cold War. So here we have the bringing of the Russians into this. And they have some, here they have Metallo being a Russian soldier. And that's interesting. And one of the things I really liked about the first miniseries was how they thought about the book as having been a movie at the time. And so Wilfredo Torres specifically would cast actors and draw them, like he had Bowie playing Brainiac in the first volume. And, you know, I don't think that's something that Gavin Guidry is capable of here, but I do like the idea of them thinking about how they would incorporate these characters into the time frame of the late 70s. And that's interesting. I mean, this certainly wasn't bad. I'm not saying it was. It was not as good as the first volume.
Did Venditti write the first one?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't remember.
Seems to be his deal.
I think one of the things I like about this series is Venditti's ability to capture the vocal tone of both Margot Kidder and yes. Christopher Reeve. Like those two in particular, he really gets their dynamic, their back and forth. And that to me, it's such a different way of portraying those characters relative to what we typically get in the comics that I just really enjoy it.
Yeah. And it was kind of nice to be in a world of classic, you know, Bronze Age Superman with you know, the planet, and Clark is a bumbling reporter and Lois doesn't know he is. Like, it was kind of nice to be back in that dynamic of Superman that's probably gone forever in the regular books.
Yeah.
So it was, I mean, I enjoyed it. It just was like, yeah, okay, wasn't as good. It's a bummer. But, you know, what are you going
to
do?
And it wasn't, I'll also say, it wasn't what I was expecting for a sequel to the last series. And so that way, the surprise of that was a little delightful in the whole, like, bringing in the Russians, bringing mm-hmm. in sort of, they almost did a Red Sun fake out with the opening sequence.
Yeah.
In a way that was kind of fun. So I really enjoyed this. I think Connor's assessment is correct. I wanted to like this more than I think I actually did, but I still thought it was really strong. And it's a number one I was really looking forward to, and I'm really looking forward to sticking with the series as it continues.
So, Punisher, number one. Written by David Pepose, art by Dave Wachter. This is a 4-issue mini. So now this is real quickly before we get into the book. You know, for a long, long, long time, we'd sort of settled into the 6-issue mini is perfect for trade length. That's how they told their arcs. There's problems with every arc being a 6. We've talked about that in the past, but that was kind of the length of the miniseries. Very quietly, last year, I think, Marvel started doing 5 issues, even taking some issues down, some from 6 to 5. This year, very quietly, with no fanfare, they've gone to 4. And so that's really...
They were 4 when we were kids.
Right, but I'm saying... This is the page count was different back then. This is a much smaller, shorter storytelling mechanism now. They put out very thin trades. It's got to be money related. They're putting out very thin trades and very short miniseries now at Marvel. It's interesting.
I'm sure. I bet the trades are pretty much the same price, so they're increasing the margin.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm just saying that the small trades in terms of the size, yeah. But it's not any cheaper.
I haven't noticed it. Like in terms of story yet, so it doesn't bother me because I kind of don't care.
I don't think the books you're reading are doing it.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Those are like side books that I'm
right. Anyway, so aside from all that, we have another Punisher reboot. Having Jason Aaron just having finished his,
which you love that.
I really did enjoy it, and I don't like the Punisher. So just in general, and so I'm going to spoil this. Yeah. I don't know another way around it. So
it's on the cover.
Yeah, a bunch of criminals a guy shows up and it's the Punisher, and you find out, oh, it's not the Punisher. It's a new guy who was a S.H.I.E.L.D. guy, and he's got his own microchip who's a lady. I don't know. And
it's a good thing his old S.H.I.E.L.D. uniform had some inserts in it that looked like a skull.
That was so fucking stupid.
Which he complained about in the issue. He said, like, oh, these... these ballistic inserts, but I'm also like, you have a different version of the shield logo on your shoulder that looks more like a skull than an eagle.
Paint it. Shut up. I really like, I don't think that this was, yeah, I kind of did think this was a bad comic book. I thought that it was all, other than the fact that it wasn't Frank Castle, everything in it was very by the numbers, and the dialogue, the scene. And I was reading it, and at one point, and I'm going to comment on this again, I'm going to bring this back around later. But as I was, every time the Punisher shows up, there's a group of bad guys who are like, we can take him. And I was like, don't you fucking read the news?
Yeah, but that's every comic. That's Batman comics and Superman comics.
I get it. It's fine. But in the context of like this, I just found it boring. It was just like, so this isn't doing, the only thing that doesn't make this exactly the same Punisher story as ones I've read a thousand times is that it's a different guy. But I don't know who the guy is. I don't care who the guy is. I don't know what his deal is. I don't know anything about it other than it's not Frank Castle, and then a bunch of completely rote Punisher scenes. And I was like, and the dialogue was
Josh,
boring.
His family was also killed by the mafia.
It's just, it would come on. There needs to be a better twist than what happened here.
I just don't understand why is any of this happening.
Well, at the end of the last one, Frank, I'm trying to remember, but I feel like it was sort of a, like, Frank Castle was like, I'm out,
dead or something, or
he's been dead a bunch of times.
My point is,
why is it happening? So they can bring him back. That's why.
But why, you know, they're so afraid of them, of the logo, because all the assholes using it, fine, you're cowards for being afraid, but I get it. So you bring a different, it's not Frank Castle's not the problem. The guy in the suit's not the problem.
They tried to change the logo for Frank.
Right, but I'm saying he's not the problem.
That was a story point in the last series, though. Like, that might have been a...
It was an excuse to change the logo. It doesn't matter what the story... They just came up with a story to change the logo. My point is this. It's not the guy with the black hair that's the problem. So bringing a blonde Punisher doesn't change the problem you had before. It still exists. So I don't understand why any of this is happening. I don't care about this guy. I like Frank Castle as a character. I want to follow his stories. I don't care about this guy.
Do they just need to retire the character?
No, we talked about this. No.
The reason that you don't want to follow this guy, aside from the other thing, though, is that there was nothing that they gave you to give a shit.
Right.
It was fucking, it's John Walker.
And there's only four issues, so we're already a quarter down. So now there's not a lot of time left.
Like, you have to, like, this is the, we are in comics and film, the comics is really bad. Was it? We are obsessed with the cold open. Which is like, we got to put action up front, otherwise people aren't going to tune in. But you got to bring something to it. This brought nothing to the table. And I feel like I'm being harsh on it, but I think that it deserved it. There was nothing, other than the characters having different faces and names, it was the most middle of the road Punisher book.
Yep.
I mean, maybe there's going to be some reveal that, oh, wow, that's why he's doing it or whatever. Then you need to tease it. You need to put it somewhere so I know something is coming, because I didn't even want to finish this.
I did like the Dave Wachter art.
He's great.
I did too.
I thought that was really strong. I thought he did a really good job.
I'm really happy to see him a lot more often than we used to, actually. By the way, guys who break in, I was going to say guys who like, and he's been around forever. He's probably, I don't know, he's my age or whatever, but he seems like he's kind of breaking into mainstream comics now. And it feels like guys who are about to break into larger books often come in on Punisher for some reason. It happens a lot. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just saying, I thought he did a really good job. The character work is really strong. There's some really nice action sequences. I mean, I'm looking at the last page. It's a really nice drawing of the Punisher, like, or whoever the fuck this guy is. At the very least, when I was intensely hating the story, I could enjoy the art. Mm-hmm. He did a really good job. Yeah. But I just kept reading this going, why is any of this happening? Why do we think this is a good idea? I'm not saying they're doing this permanently. I'm just saying, why are we doing this? They didn't give us a reason why there is a new Punisher. There was no why given here. If you're going to replace a character, you got to tell me why it's happening. There's got to be a reason for it, even if it's temporary.
I assume they have a reason. I don't think they're that bad. It's just they didn't show us any of it.
Right, that's what I mean. This wasn't an issue.
Ugh. Yeah. Like, you've got to really love the concept of the Punisher to be like, I can't wait to see what happens next. If the beginning of issue 2, Frank Castle shoots this motherfucker in the head, I'll buy the rest of this series.
Frank Castle's an
first
interesting
pages.
Frank Castle's an interesting character.
He is. I am sick of him, however, so I
that's
am
fine. I'm just saying. You just read 2 years. I didn't read that book because I didn't care about Frank Castle.
It's a totally
demon,
different book, and I am also like, you know, I want to give Jason Aaron a chance on most things, and also just spectacular Paul Azaceta flashback art.
Right, I'm just saying that the weight of history at Marvel has made him an interesting character. Yes, he's a psychopathic mass murderer, and you can have feelings about that, absolutely. My point is there's been years and years and decades of interesting Frank Castle stories, and which makes him an interesting character, and I don't know who this person is or why I care or why I'm supposed to care. You need to tell me the first issue why I'm supposed to care.
Or
you
at
can't
least,
assume I'm going to read all four issues.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Speaking of a character I can barely recognize at this
point. I don't like that you put this in the rundown.
He hasn't been talking about it at all on the show. And he's
I saw this on the list, and I was like, son of a bitch.
Ugh, go ahead. I'm going to sit back.
Go ahead, Ryan. Go ahead.
Batman number 139, Legacy numbering
904. No. Batman 904.
Batman 904.
Also call it 139, but it's 904.
But there's no term for that. New numbering, Legacy numbering has a term. Anyway, I don't want to get into it with you two. I have issues with the way it's presented on the show.
It's called numbering.
Whoa!
This is more interesting than anything we're going to say about Batman.
I think you should use the primary number on the book because then you can still say the legacy number. I don't think the legacy number should be the prime number
that is
referred
not how
to
you
in the show.
Start revolution, Ryan, is by capitulating.
Here, by the way, just for the record, here's my term, and it's redumbering.
Redumbering?
Redumbering.
When
you make a new one,
it's redumbered.
It shouldn't be there. It's redumbering it.
I hate that.
I love it.
Well, we were here first.
that's fine. Listen, I know I'm in a losing fight on this one, so I don't feel so strongly about it that I won't, you know, toe the company line. I screwed up in the script. Apologies. But I don't like this Bruce Wayne.
Everything about it's terrible. I do think the art is terrific. Jorge Jimenez, I thought the art was beautiful.
Well,
there's a couple of really wow pages on here.
Is excellent with all the
Tomo Morey coloring. He we talked about him last week, I believe. He's really doing a great job. Oh, there's a Wonder Woman he colors. Great job he's been doing.
I always think of him from Tom King's Batman. I think he colored that whole thing.
Yeah. It every single thing about this is terrible. Everything. There's not one good thing about Batman right now. And that's why we don't talk about it on the show.
Bruce Wayne's being a real dick.
It is fascinating to me that like Chip Zdarsky is a person who we like. Really, like the great majority of his work, but this is just like you were very happy he was coming on because shit was going bad.
I was hoping he was going to get a chance to, because of his name and status in the industry. I was hoping he was going to get a chance to sort of reset
break
things.
Out.
But it's I don't blame him for this unless he came in and said let's continue the terrible status quo. I'm excited about it. Then I blame him, but I don't know that he did or didn't do that. This is the same. Terrible status quo we've had now for at least 2 years, so I can't blame any one creator for it. It's a company-wide situation. And so it's not his fault.
Does DC just want Batman to be a dick?
I don't understand.
Because like he's basically the villain of this book right now.
I wouldn't go that far. Okay. I mean, the Joker is the villain. He's murdering people. But, you know... It's the same thing with Tony Stark. Can't have any good billionaires, even though this is a fantasy world. So he's working out of a apartment with his fake mustache and his crew cut because he's alienated the entire Batman family in the war in Gotham. And so then he's got no more partners. And Vandal Savage bought and lives in the mansion. Also, by the way, everyone knows who he is in the bad guy side. Vandal Savage knows. Joker knows. Everyone knows. Everyone knows.
I hate that.
He's got Zen-Ara dogging him. Messing with his head. All these things are terrible. And there's three Jokers, which is the concept that was introduced a while ago, and it should have been kept away. But everything about this is terrible. Everything.
Sticking with it?
It's irredeemable.
You zinged him, buddy.
Thanks.
I don't see any way out of this. I really don't see any way out of this unless they have some cosmic character come and wipe their hand across Gotham City and fix it. Like, there's no way out of the hole they've dug themselves in with Batman. I'd love to see the sales numbers in this. We have no idea what DC sales numbers are, but I'd love to see them. Maybe they're great because Jorge Jimenez is terrific and it looks beautiful, but you know, this feels like
I don't think the story affects sales numbers at all on a book like this.
They drove the car into a ditch and now they have nothing they can do about it.
Is this the worst that Batman has been in a while?
Yeah, forever. And maybe ever.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. They've taken the fundamental elements of Batman. And there's one scene here where, you know, the Joker's fucking with his head. And so he's got a dummy of the scene at the spotlight where his parents are dead. And there's, we see Jason Todd dummy, and there's a dummy of Alfred. I'm just like, all of these things, like, this is all fucked. Like, it started with Tom King. It's not his fault. Again, he told us in the Talksplode he wanted to fake kill Alfred, and Dan DiDio said, no, kill him, because we're going to get rid of Batman anyway. And so once that happened, that was the moment. And again, not Tom King's fault. It was editorial. That was the moment it all went wrong, and they have never come back from that. Batman is not enjoyable.
All right, so Bruce meets a wizard who's one of the a Shazam level wizard who's one of the cosmic powers of the universe.
That's the only thing that can happen now at this point.
And I think that boy already traumatized, man altruistically navigating. What's the end? The end is where I'm failing to.
Can Mitch's Picklick fix this?
Yeah, that's a great. So. Or Batmite.
Any of the characters can fix this, but someone's got to fix it.
Wouldn't it be great if they just did that at the beginning of a reboot? It's just like page one, he's like, biddly bibbity dee, anyway, and all just fucking gone.
Well, that's kind of what happened in Mark Waid's Captain America way back in the 90s was
he was
poisoned.
When he was a werewolf?
And he died, and then they went to the Rob Liefeld crap, and then Waid came in, and he literally had his body put in the machine, a bunch of buttons got pushed, levers got pulled, and his body came out and he was fine, and they just rebooted him. They just wiped it all away. They said, don't worry about anything that happened before. He's back. And that's what they kind of have to do with Batman. But the problem is it's his whole world. It's not just a broken body at this point. His entire being. The villains all know who he is. He's got no money. He's got no sidekicks. He's got no butler. It's all broken.
Connery's got a hand that shoots gas.
And it's not even because he's got a fake hand too. That's right. He's missing a hand as well.
And I love that, like Bruce Wayne has to cover for his missing hand for some reason.
And you know, I just don't understand. Like it's their cash cow. Like this is their cash cow character. I know this for a fact. I used to work with their consumer products division at Warner Brothers. This guy makes this one character makes a vast majority of Warner Brothers consumer products money, and they've ruined him at every turn right now.
You know, this is just development for the film.
Well, the film doesn't even go this far. Like, if the Batman, they had him, like, young and kind of rough around the edges, but he still had the mansion, he still had Alfred, he still had all that stuff.
They kind of blew Alfred up in that movie, though.
He lived through the bomb.
So far.
It's just a fucking disaster. This is why I don't talk about it on the show.
That's great.
How do you come back from all the villains knowing who he is unless you have some, you know, Doctor Strange come in and cast a spell? That's all you can do.
That would sell gangbusters.
Be awesome.
It would. Yeah. Thanos number one by Christopher Cantwell, the man who I guess is just going to work his way through every terrible man in the comic universe to write. An art by Luca Pizzari, colors by Ruth Redman, and letters by Corey Pettit. I don't know what's going on in this book.
I liked it, though.
I kind of liked it, too, but I don't know what's going on.
There's some woman, for some reason, Thanos comes back and steals, much like Brainiac took cities into his thing. He steals Fresno.
Right. More like Fres, yes.
And because there's some woman there, young woman who works somewhere, you know, sort of down and out, not getting by very well. She's the main character here. He steals Fresno in his Bottle City, and then the Illuminati show up to fight him. I liked it, though. I did. This is also a four-issue miniseries, by the way.
Yeah, I was all right.
Thanos was in a Black Hole?
That just wasn't...
Who knows?
I don't know. The mystery part was interesting enough, I guess, but I wanted a little more, I think. But I was like, that's...
Yeah.
I didn't quite get what I wanted.
Did Emma Frost marry into the Illuminati?
Where I think the mystery lost me a little bit was the older woman showing up and being like, I know who you are, and the young woman being like, sort of seeming to know what she was talking about, but not really giving in to the... That to me was like, I'm just confused by what the relationship is here. And yeah, I wasn't totally sure. I mean, how did... So Blue Marvel and Emma Frost are new to the Illuminati, right?
Yeah, it was Namor and Black Bolt, so they needed replacements.
Black Bolt, yeah.
That's fine. I'm just curious. If you can marry into the Illuminati, I didn't know you could do that, but...
And Professor X.
That's right. Well, he's gone.
Professor X was the original.
You gotta have a replacement.
I know.
I assume the mystery will be unfolding through the course of the story, and so we'll figure out who she is by the time we get to the end.
Right, how many issues does this one get?
Four.
He's at 12. Is it just four?
Four. Transformers number 2. I wanted to mention because I don't think I ever thought about the scale of the Transformers before.
And then they stepped on a deer, a servant.
But, I thought this was terrific, but I just don't... I guess because the toys were kind of the same size as all the other toys I had, so in my head, they're all just Transformers are kind of like man size, but...
So that's really interesting because I was obsessed with the scale of them because of, in the cartoon, it wasn't consistent. Mm. And so, like, they would stand next to the human.
Right.
You know, Megatron's the best example. Like, he'd be, like, twice as tall as a human and then turn into a gun that the human could hold. And they just...
Right,
and
the
I respect
mask doesn't work.
This.
Where's the mask go?
I love that they didn't touch it. They just went, whatever. And I'm totally fine with that. But at the scale that you're talking about, it's from the movies. That's what it is.
Oh, I know.
That's
just
when they got that big.
And I'm not saying it's wrong either. I'm just saying, in this issue is to open up with Optimus Prime accidentally steps on a deer. And he's, you know, sitting next to Spike. And I was like, oh, shit, he's fucking huge. But then I thought, well, if his chest is the size of a truck front, then I guess that makes sense. And I went with it. I mean, not Ratchet. Who's that? Cliffjumper is much smaller. But
those proportions are correct to the toys, which will give you that same problem because you had your toys, right? And none of them were in scale with each other. You know, like Soundwave was a gigantic boombox. And I remember eight, 9 year old Josh. I really couldn't wrap my head around it. That might be one of the reasons I don't like it to this day, because it's like they don't go together. Like all the G.I. Joe stuff
fits.
Was the same scale. It all went together. And I like that.
I don't think it's big as the aircraft carrier was. I don't think it was actually to scale.
That was a small one, but at least they made an effort.
Sure.
Like that, or like pit, a real pit. Aircraft carrier would be stupid.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, I liked this. I thought it was really pretty good. That scene where I thought that he said so much about the inherent sort of goodness of these characters if you did not know them, by having him step on the deer and be instantly heartbroken by it, and then have that really cool conversation, you know, where they have him anthropomorphized even more so by having him sit on the ground like a person was, even though he would never, ever do that. But he should have there, and it worked. Like, right away...
Wait, are you saying Optimus Prime doesn't sit? Because DC's whole thing is Batman never sits, so that's weird.
Yeah, well, you know, they wouldn't... Anyway, so the point being that, like... This is exactly the if you had never read Transformers, you didn't know that you knew exactly who Optimus Prime was at the end of this. And I did enough that but it let me know who this Optimus Prime is in this. Yep. And I thought it was great.
True. There's two really, things I want to really mention before we move on is that I love the building mystery of Megatron.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like there's a great shot of him sort of like the almost the Kaiser Soze shot where he's walking towards us with the flames behind him. And he's being built up into this real big threat who... We don't. Why is he not on the ship? Why is he not there? He was like that's interesting. And then, of course, we had these cameo by Duke. Speaking of G.I. Joe, so I'm excited. This was terrific.
And I liked the dogfight, and I liked the smack to kill the pilot after eject was brutal.
Well, this is what I was going to say is that like these Decepticons are real bad guys in this. Like those are your stakes. Like they're squishing folk.
Yeah.
They're like totally cool with it. There's one other tiny bit. So there is a panel, there's a sequence, and in the middle of it, Prime is halfway transformed and it is terrifying Transformer body horror. Like he threw it mid-transform with his head flipping back, and I was so like, that's not supposed to be frozen in a frame. It wasn't okay. I generally, like I'm looking at it now, I was like, I think he's trying to freak me out. and respect
there's
that drawing.
There's a whole body horror thing running through comics in the last couple of years, and I don't like it. I'm not down for it.
Body horror, you got to respect the chutzpah to go after it, though.
Would either of you willingly get inside a Transformer, knowing that if they transform back, you would be killed horrifically?
I would get inside Optimus Prime, which sounds dirty, but it's not. I think he would take care of me. I think all the Autobots would. No, the Autobots would all be very gentle.
No. But there's intention, and then there's not really paying attention. Like,
I have to believe there's a reflexive instinct to transform. Sure.
You would never get inside Optimus Prime, Josh.
Well, we're talking about, I mean, like in the
on your anniversary?
In fictional sense.
It's the only time Prime will be in there.
In the fictional sense, yes. But as we said, like from a very young age, they didn't make sense to me. And I was like, well, where do the people go? How does it? And I don't trust it. Like I inherently don't trust it. They're trying to act like it's not a problem.
There was a version of Optimus Primal from Beast Wars where he was a version that had a cockpit that was retained even in any transform to robot mode so that a human could conceivably just stay inside that cockpit. That to me is comforting. So I would need there to be some sort of containment unit for me in the case of a transformation, I think is what I'm saying.
Josh, did I tell you I watched the new movie?
I saw that. I saw it in the theater.
Yeah, no, I watched it a couple weeks ago.
To watch it. I'm going to watch it.
Or whatever it's on. Whatever one it's on. I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
It was fine.
Yeah, John Lawrence / Alexander Hamilton's son.
Yeah,
I thought
it was fine. It was enjoyable.
It was fine. It was. I mean, like, and you could they fixed the thing where you can't see anything,
right?
You know,
like much better at that. Yeah,
yeah, that's helpful.
So I have a thing I want to say about the Enfield Gang Massacre. This is number.
I wonder if it's going to be the same thing I would say.
That I feel kind of want to admit. About
I feel kind of bad about which is I feel like I need to read these all as one go because I'm losing track of what's happening.
And I, you're correct. My real thought on it is like, I really like this book. Like I like it a lot, but I don't think that I am that unusual between the fourth issue and the fifth issue or third and fourth that I don't remember who any of these, you know, well-drawn, diverse looking people are, but I don't know who Enfield is. I don't know which sheriff is which. Right. They both have handlebar mustaches and they put in no effort. Like this was the book where like there was a one page reveal of a guy there, and I was like, I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I need to read these as a collection or something.
No, I mean yes,
all together. I need to read them back-to-back because I'm losing the thread.
But the thing is, they're putting this out in issue form. They know when it comes out, and it's a very respected and old comic book tradition to you identify the people. You say who they are.
I've been saying that for years, but they stopped doing it. You got to say everyone's name. In the book.
Yeah,
you
you're
do.
Right.
But
you're right.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they know better than that. Like,
No one does it.
I don't. It doesn't matter. You were saying, I need to read. You don't. You shouldn't have to do that.
Right. But the reality is, I do because they don't do those things.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. But I think you're right, Connor. It needs to be like, you're right, Enfield. We need to escape this massacre. You know,
I had to say the title in the story, but we're all Seven Eves.
Or do what Chaykin finally decided.
It was the Seven Eves we made along the way. Really,
like do a roll call at the beginning.
I agree with you.
Like you have to. Did you see the roll call for that last issue of Chaykin's comics?
Oh yes. It was long. It was longer than the Enfield Gang Massacre book.
So, but I have to admit something. I think even dumber. Uh-oh. This is me. This is not the book's fault. This isn't real, right?
No.
No.
This is not a true story.
Because like the articles at the end are, I would say, terrific. Like what I now realize is a fake Texas Record issue 88, September 1966. I definitely went through the first couple issues thinking this was a real story that they were adapting.
No, it's not. And I think it's a takeoff of of Texas Monthly, which is a terrific magazine. I've actually missed I read the first article. I think I skipped the third. I need to read the articles too. I think the other problem, I think the articles are giving too much of the story. Like you need to read the articles, I think. But
they're very good and they are helping me keep track of the characters. And I would say they're like Watchmen level back matter in terms of both the slog at seeing the wall of text, but also the quality of how it enriches the story.
Yeah, I just got to read this all again.
I just
felt dumb because I thought this was real history, and I looked it up. There's not even Ambrose County, Texas. That's like not a real place.
It's the fake county from That Texas Blood.
Yeah, no, I knew that it was in that Texas Blood universe. I also did not realize that Ambrose County in That Texas Blood was also not real. So like I'm very dumb.
Ryan, it's, also no, Batman I mean, that, is not real fair. Either. It's not based on true story. Like,
I could
then why
see
are you
that.
So upset that he's an asshole?
I'm not. You're upset he's an asshole. I don't think he's an asshole. I think his world is broken. We can get back into Batman if you want.
Fair enough. Yep, you're right.
Josh, what were you saying?
I've lost track of all. Like, I could believe this book is a true story. I could believe that.
Sure.
Yeah, that was alright. Yeah.
Or at least a dramatization of one. I don't think that's so far off. And the fact is, most of the time, I won't look it up because I don't want to have it spoiled. So I'll wait until I'm done to find out how real it was. And I don't read the essays because who has fucking time for that?
They've been really good though, Josh.
They're really good.
I recognize
it. Is Gru based on a true story?
Well, okay. So here's the thing: the best Frank Castle stories are, I think, tend to not be the ones about him. You accept him as a force of nature.
Mm-hmm.
You put him in Vietnam. You kill a lot of fucks, and you say you see what the other people around him say. That was mm-hmm. the Max. That was a bunch of them,
mm-hmm.
and that's what Gru is. Is what it occurred to me. So remember I said in the other one, all of it was like, we can take him this time. What I love about this Gru series, and I don't know if this is consistent through the whole thing, I assume they're all pretty much the same,
mm-hmm.
is that when Gru shows up, everyone goes, fuck it, we're out of here. Yeah, everyone, no matter what, and they keep doing it over and over, and I said, that's what the Punisher should be.
that's a Gru hallmark. Yeah,
Gru of the World number 4 is what I'm talking about. It came out as the last. Oh my God, Connor's right. It's a 4-issue miniseries.
Yep.
But see? the fact that there is a Gru miniseries at this point, I'll take a 1.5 years, whatever.
Well, Sergio Aragona's packed so much shit into it, it doesn't feel like a 4-issue miniseries.
Right. No, totally. But then at the end of it, it was like a very, very on the nose metaphor about man. And nature for like a lot of it, making sort of Gru the one being, oh man, it would be too bad if we didn't have these things to eat. And I loved it.
I think Gru is great. I loved Gru as a kid. I like Gru I read now. I just didn't read this for whatever reason. I don't know why.
It was fun. It was super stupid, but it's just like, I'm hungry. Yes, we should eat that thing. And then people run away. That's it. It happened 14 times and it was good to go.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Real quickly, I do want to mention I got to go back to the beginning so I can say the title exactly correct. The Joker, The Man Who Stopped Laughing. This is issue number 12, so it's the last issue of this. Wait, I thought you were Joker. No, I'm a Joker. Who are you? Matt Rosenberg and DeGian Domenico, whose art I love. And so there's two creators doing a book that I would never buy, but they did. I've read it the entire way through. And every time I think, I don't know if I really want to pick this up again. And then eventually I remember that I did like it. There was an amazing page turn in this one that really was fun. It was a Joker blimp. And if you're reading it, you're going to know it was awesome. And I really, really, really liked the ending. And when you have a 12 issue story about who are you, I'm you, when you can stick the ending like that, I was delighted. And so it turns out that this book, which has a title and a concept with which I should never read, but the creators really brought it, I thought.
So those are the books we wanted to talk about. Josh, I'm surprised you didn't want to delve deep into the Rickrap saga on Amazing Spider-Man this week.
You know what? I didn't want to talk about it. We did it, and it got worse, and I'm waiting for it to be over. This is like my Spider-Man version of your Batman right now. It's like, just make it be over.
I'm also reading Amazing Spider-Man. Could not tell you what the fuck is going on.
I just flipped through it.
It's pretty simple. I don't get into it. This is not a book on the rundown, but it's all these demons from Limbo have invaded New York, and there's a guy bringing them back, and Spider-Man's trying to stop him. It's a pretty simple setup. But we're not talking about that book. We're talking about the patron pick over at patreon.com/ifanboy. Every patron to vote to add a book to the rundown. This week, by I think a one vote win, the winner was Petrol Head, number one. From Image Comics, Rob Williams is the writer. Robbie Williams is a singer. Art, color, letters, all of it by Pi Par. an artist I've never heard of, but an artist who is terrific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And much like Transformers, we've got another robot story here in the future, in a world in which
humanity disaster, is stuck anxiety. In
only several domed cities because they've destroyed the environment. Robots race for our enjoyment and amusement, and yet the robots have ennui and don't want to do that. At least some of them don't. And
this is after. We don't know what happened.
I know.
Well, there's parallel timelines that we're right. seeing.
What are you talking about? There's one timeline.
No. Well, there's parallel stories there's being flashbacks. Told at two different points in time.
Mm. Well, we start in the past and we jump to the... Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, you're right. The daughter and the father are in the flash. And the point is this. I thought this was incredibly fun and silly, and the art was beautiful, and I quite enjoyed it.
This is going to play into the climate change ennui of it all. I have to admit, and I realize this might be a silly thing to think about and have a concern about, but like, I honestly do actually have a concern that the gas guzzling fossil fuel powered robot is the hero. Like, no, that's the problem. That's
okay.
The
so no, whoa, hold fix. On, hold on, hold on. So I think, first of all, we have to remember here that Rob Williams is a Brit. And I think that that matters because the attitude and the thought about the American car culture has a different twist to it to a certain extent.
Do we know this is America?
It doesn't matter. I mean, if it's like Detroit-style muscle cars, it's inherently American, I think. It's not like they're like rally cars and tuners. Like, it's not bad.
It's America, man. You got to let them play.
Well, no, but I think that, it's kind of brilliant to say, okay, we have these domes where we have to put ourselves because we smoked up the atmosphere so bad we couldn't be outside. And then to have those humans' favorite thing be watching robots with gas engines race, I was like, that's such a human thing. Yeah, but it's a great satire, sure. I think, yeah. In that way. And then to then make that guy the hero, and let's acknowledge... The base ridiculousness of this is that the hero robot, if that's what he ends up being, smokes cigarettes.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite image of at some point someone, I gave him a cigarette and he has a little cigarette nozzle where he puts it. It's ridiculous.
I actually thought at one point, I think that might be his exhaust pipe as like a gas powered.
No, entity. I don't think it not. Is. I think it's an actual cigarette receptacle.
All right.
Because if it was like a lot of the toys would have, like, they take the car apart and they make it into a thing. If it was like a thing that was supposed to be, like, it looked like a cigarette, but it wasn't. But it's not. It's an actual cigarette. So if you look on
the cigarette,
second,
sure.
second page of art. Yeah. No, anyway, I liked that part a lot. My thought about this is that, again, concept, it's a post-apocalyptic world. We have ruined the environment. Humans have had to go underground. There's a problem. There's 15 books with that right now. You come in and you do it really well with an interesting story and characters and great art and coloring. Play ball.
Yeah.
You know, like...
I 100% agree. And the thing is that I... Yeah.
Yeah. Like, earlier in the week... I said to you, I was like, there's a new book. This is before patron voting or whatever. And I was like, there's a new Rob Williams book out, Connor. I don't know if you'll like it. Because I know that the setup for this, not your bag. But...
Well, like I said, there's 15 of these. So it's like, it's got to be interesting and it's got to be different. And this one is I think, winky enough. It's winking at you. There's a talking bird. Yes. There's a smoking robot. I mean, the whole setup was silly. And although it's only works if it's silly on top of reality, which is, you know, not silly. And that's how the best right. sort of satire works. And you're 100% right. Human beings would be all about gas-powered car racing, even though they can't.
I mean, to be fair, we are stuck in a dome that is keeping us alive, and right. it's our favorite thing.
So
go for
the
it.
Thing I never understood is the wacky racers, like the bad guys cheat so much. Like, how are they just allowed to cheat that blatantly?
Because that's what they're there for. What was I just watching? It was a comic or, but they were making people fight and then they would, this was a comic, I think. And because the people weren't interested, they would let the certain people cheat. Is it this book? It's this book. It's the race. Book.
Yeah, they were monitoring people's interest. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
That was wacky racers.
I felt so bad for that robot, that old man robot. He had like the robot walrus mustache, and he just was finally going to get his win.
He was 8 years
to win, 8 long years. But I told you, had this old robo boy still had got some gas in his tank. Boom! Like I just was like, oh, old man robot. It was good. Ugh. The artist I don't know who Pi Par is, but there's
the
world building is crazy.
There's the art, as in the comic book art and the page storytelling. Then the other half of these spectacular character designs.
Yeah.
Like these are like if an amazing illustrator who didn't have to worry about making toys or a cartoon got to create Transformers.
That's a really good observation.
Yeah. It's just that good.
I mean, and the coloring, it's really good.
So I don't know who the artist is, but they got the shit down. Like,
yeah.
It's so weird. Like, it's one thing when a writer comes along and is really good at a comic book, whatever. Like, how did you not know this person was around? Like, how did they come out so fully formed? It's weird.
When I saw the initial couple of pages, and look, there's really good work to be done in these. I've got so much stress about the world and the environment comics that are coming out. It's just, there's so many of them. And after a while they're not interesting, even if they're good. This is sort of like a level above what everyone else is doing. And because it's really fun, I can't do the really sad ones. Cause I'm not reading these books to get sad. I got that outside world for that.
You still reading any Jeff Lemire stuff?
Yes.
No. But he's not doing sad. The world is ending. He's doing sad characters. That's different.
Did you? Well, Phantom Road came out this week. That was the
and Fish Flies is not.
No, Fish Flies I'm not reading. Phantom Road.
No.
The difference between Jeff Lemire and this is Jeff Lemire is not doing it sad because the world's ending. He's doing these characters are sad for their tragic reasons. That's different.
It just happens that the world is ending around him is the reason for this one.
So anyway, I thought the whole thing had familiar elements of like Hunger Games plus Mad Max plus. You know, like roller derby, like all kinds of things pushed together in a blender.
Rollerball, Running Man.
Yeah. Fun. A little bit of Disney.
I'm really pleased. I wasn't sure if the concept was going to be too much for you to get around. Because obviously I knew it was well done. But I'm really glad that you enjoyed it.
I figured you'd like it.
Ratings.
Petrol had 4. Number 1. Whoa. You seem much more down on it.
Yeah, I'm not sticking with it, but it's still a 4.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it just the car thing? Did we not give you enough chance to elucidate?
I think it's the you did. Thank you for asking. But no, I think it's just I feel like this the way I felt about Scumbag number 1, where I'm like, this is a well told story, well rendered in the comic book art form, but it's not a story I need right now. Like, it is not the fun, light take that I think the two of you are receiving it as. To me, it is still part of the existential ennui of climate change, and it is not giving me enough of an escape from that it is a relief to read it.
That makes sense. Done correctly with the right kind of satire, I can handle it. I think it's like an Adam McKay movie. Like, I don't want to talk about any of those things, but he does a real good job with it.
And yeah, and that movie, the Don't Look Up, that bummed me the hell out. That was not a good that was not a fun hang for me. So
I understand. It was definitely like it cries so much that we may as well laugh about it kind of thing. So I gotta give it a number, huh? Connor, you can go in anytime.
I'll go 4.5. I think. And I'm sticking 4.5. With it for sure. Yeah, I thought everything about it was really well done, and the story was fun and compelling. The characters were interesting.
I'm going to say 4.25, and I found myself multiple times in this saying, I don't know why Rob Williams doesn't sort of do more comics work. And what I'm going to say is that he doesn't want to. He just does the comics he wants to. I don't know, but it's like, because he's great. He'll pop something every once in a while. Just fantastic. Yeah, I'm excited to read the rest of it.
Okay, let's reward our patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy. Every patron, well, they get to vote to add a book to run now, but the $5 or higher patrons, they get a dumb superpower live on the show. This week, Ryan's got the job.
This week, Keith Robinson gets the remarkable or maybe unremarkable patron power of being the adhesive. He can bind things.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
the arm of my chair just fell off while we were talking. So that's like crazy coincidence.
And I think it goes both to the physical, because like if you look into like adhesive technology, you know, there's like the ones you're supposed to use for plastic and glass and wood and metal and all this. So he can excrete any of those from his body to bind things together. But I think also like he could perform the best marriage ceremony you've ever seen. Let these so two people
anything
be bound
involving binding.
Bound in holy matrimony.
I mean, that's a death knell to a marriage.
There's also a thing called stuck.
No, they're not physically stuck. It's they're metaphorically bound.
There's also a thing called transglutamina, which is meat glue, which causes animal proteins to bind to one another. Stone Temple Pilots song. Sure. So like there's some horrific consequences of this power, but the fundamental premise is that Keith brings things together. He's a joiner.
So it's not just physically, it's also metaphorically.
So what you're saying is that he actually could have a TED Talk and it would make sense.
If he can find a way to make the horrific power of meat glue into a metaphor for undying love, then yeah.
Well, he just said he could perform the best ceremony. So what does that mean?
You send him to Congress. That's all.
I think by performing the best ceremony, I think the people being wed would feel bound.
That's what I mean. So
I feel pretty bound.
It's a metaphorical binding.
Yeah, I think. I might have overpowered this person, and I'll have to live with those consequences.
Wait, did they attack you? Sorry,
I'm bound to this power.
Thank you, Keith Robinson, for being a patron. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Plugs. Three shows back, you can find our last Media Explode, Killers of the Flower Moon, and a discussion about 3-hour-long movies. That was our October show. And then after that was Josh's Talksplode interview with Jason Aaron. And then right behind this show and before the Talksplode show, you can find our November Media Explode, which is the year-end mailbag, which we, Josh, Ron, and I delved into lots of different subjects, lots of different questions on the mailbag. We answered a bunch of your emails. That was super fun. So you can find that right behind the show in the mailbag, in the feed. And then the holiday schedule is, we got 4 more picks of the week, 8 total shows between now and our holiday break. This coming week, we have our Marvels review. And then we'll have pick week 905, 906, 907, 908 will be our last show this week. We'll also last show this year. In terms of picks of the week, we have our Booksplode review of 10 Ninja Turtles at the end of this month. And we have a Talksplode in December, and then we end this year with all media year-end roundup, as always. So that's the last show of the year on December 17th. We come back on January 7th with Pick of the Week 909.
You can find our library of...
Subscribe to YouTube.
I just was like, I'm going to do like a dramatic pause, and I held it longer than I meant. And I was like, they think I'm fucking up. You can find our library of over 1,300, possibly more, shows and counting at ifanboy.com or wherever podcasts are sold, which is kind of a joke because they're not sold. Well, some are. Follow us at ifanboycomics on Instagram to find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. And sometimes for the best of the week in panels, follow us individually. C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram, J.A. Flanagan on Instagram, and Ryan Halpert. But that is silent, that P, on Instagram. So it's a Ryan Howe. It's not silent. It's
not quite silent, yeah.
No, it's something's going on there because it's missing a vowel. But
it's a one-syllable last name that people still struggle with, and yeah. it's been my whole life. Subscribe to youtube.com/iFanboy,
where you'll find videos. You should be YouTube.
You'll find all the old video shows and the post of this show every week. Smash that subscribe button. Click the bell so you'll be notified. All the annoying things YouTubers say. Imagine a thumbnail of me making a face that's like this. And I just made a face that's like exaggerated for no reason.
Yep.
Waving your arms around too much. What? Talking in exactly the same way and then just fucking clipping the shit out of the microphone.
And then write us a review of what you think of my face and the clipping and all the other things. And you can leave that review or star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Don't review this episode. Review a,
you say that episode. So often when I'm on the show that like
I would like to apologize just across the board. I'd like to apologize to anyone who had to listen to me. I would like to apologize to the French for my brief malignment and the Italian for my earlier ones.
No. We don't apologize to Italians. That was last week.
No. First, no. I got letters, Connor. Apologizing to everyone. They're coming for me.
Oh, jeez.
It was just, I got an envelope. It was my mom's thumb.
Some old lady was dressed in black, wrote your name on this paper and set it on fire somewhere.
She just goes, "Morte." No, I don't apologize to the Canadians. You guys know what you did, you fuckers.
I'm Ryan.
Go ahead.
I'm Connor.
I'm sorry. You know what you should cut? Most of it.
This is a business. Can I get a witness? Fitness. Just so the man can't get us. With the swiftness. Show him what the gift does. It's supposed to live in a flip. That's true. Hey, you. Do you even know what I be talking about when I be talking about the news? Yeah. This is a movement. Let me see you moving. Proving that you even know what you're doing. I'm assuming that we only human. We bounce because the system is moving. Yeah. For the sake of anyone who make up. Instead of war, I'm ready for anyone who fake love. So I would like to formally invite you to move because the lightning will strike you.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ifanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/ifanboy.